So, you know, one of my favorite stories, if you've been around the WASP very long, you will have heard the B-29 story, right? The B-29 was hastily put together by Boeing because we needed to win this war. And Colonel Paul Tibbetts was put in charge of finding the men to fly that. And the men were hesitant to fly it because it had this nasty habit of the engine catching on fire. So the men were reluctant. And my understanding is Colonel Tibbetts made a call to Boeing and said, something's wrong with your airplane. And they said, no, you just have to follow directions. So he went to an airfield, Eglin Airfield, Elgin, sorry. And he found two WASP, and he, Dee Dorman and Dora Doherty, and said, could I talk you into flying a B-29? And they said, oh, yeah. We'll do that. He trained him in 3 days, and then he took him around to various air bases. And then, of course, they'd come in and make a beautiful landing. The men would run out to the flight line to congratulate these pilots. And when the ladies came out and took their caps off and the long hair fell down, they went, oh. But there was no trouble. After about, my understanding is 3 to 4 of these little demonstrations, and then the men were back in there. So, you know, that's the plane that dropped the bombs on Hiroshima, and so I'd like to think that the WASP helped win the war.
Backing up just a little bit, Lisa, about tell us a little bit about the political and also the military initially opposing this.
They were hesitant. It was such an unknown. You know, every pilot had to pass a physical. They never had any physicals on women, the Army flight surgeons. There was just so much unknown. You know, could they really fly these planes? And Hap Arnold initially didn't think that they could. But desperation leads you to a new place, right? And so toward the end, after Jackie Cochran had been making her case and making her case, Eleanor Roosevelt actually had her own column at the time, and she wrote this article that said, it is time to send in the secret weapon, and that secret weapon is our women. And really, we think that's kind of what pushed it, you know, over the finish line. And they said, okay, we'll try it. But what I'm so proud to say is when that last class came through, the program lasted from 1942 to 1944. They had, you know, tried to militarize it. They'd put it before Congress, and the bill didn't pass. And so they were going to disband the program. But at that point, that last class graduated and never got to fly. But Hap Arnold came, and he spoke at their graduation, and he said, you know, this is no longer an experiment. You've proved it. You have flown wingtip to wingtip with your brothers, and you have proved that women can fly military airplanes.
Why did the military never recognize them, though, as part of the military?
That's a question we ask ourselves a lot. You know, in his address.
Was it all politics, I guess? So.
And that's what I would assume. In his address to the ladies, he said, we have it in the transcripts, he said, you will after he said, you've flown wingtip to wingtip with your brothers, you will never be forgotten. But they were. Those records were sealed. And I've never found a definitive answer as to why they were sealed. But, you know, in 1972, when women were being accepted into the Army, the WASP said, wait a minute, they're not first. We were first. And they had to bring their papers to prove it. They had kept their discharge papers and their, you know, all the correspondence. And that was instrumental because Barry Goldwater saw one of their discharge papers and he said, this is the same letter I got when I left. And it put it over the edge.
Now, only recently they've been recognized and they can be buried in Arlington. That who initiated that, the recognition?
So, you know, they were finally, retroactively recognized in 1977 by Jimmy Carter, right? And yet, oddly enough, they weren't allowed to be buried in Arlington Cemetery, which to me is so odd. I mean, you're either in or you're not, right? So why that distinction? And so it was Elaine Harmon's greatest wish. She was a WASP. It was her greatest wish to be buried in Arlington Cemetery. And so after she passed away, her family began that fight. And I don't honestly remember how long it took, but it was a process. Yeah, a couple of years, maybe more. But a big letter writing campaign took a while.
Now, you wanted Olga to make a comment here, did you?
Yes, I did. So we have Olga Custodio, and oh, you've got the mic right there.
Yeah, she's got it.
Yes, so she's going to kind of speak to what happened after the WASP.
Yes, I'm retired Lieutenant Colonel Olga Custodio, and it's such an honor to be here. But what I want to tie in as a legacy is that we military female pilots that came in the late 70s and early 80s stand on the shoulders of these women who proved to the government that women could truly fly. We were capable of anything they threw our way. As one of the first female Air Force military pilots, it was a challenge at times to let them see what we were made of. But just to tag on a story that Lisa threw out, when the women landed and they took off their garb and let their hair down, what I would do when I landed, I would take my gloves off so the crew chief coming up the ladder of the T-38 could see that I had fingernails, they looked great, and he knew I was a female, and he would not call me sir. So that was great. And in 1982, the WASP joined and contacted one of our pioneer female pilots, a T-38 instructor at in Phoenix. I can't think of the name right now, but anyway, they had already formed an organization knowing that the new military female pilots were going to need the support and camaraderie to get us through this phase as we were new to the new era in the military. And it was called the Women Military Pilots Association. So we gathered together, and B. Haydu and Sarah Hayden got us together, and as charter members of the Women Military Pilots Association, they kind of guided us and gave us that support and information that we were going to need to move forward as military pilots. So in 1983, we had our first convention with the WASP and the female pilots that we had. And one great story that I have and great experience is it took females from three different bases to form a T-38 four-ship formation. And we honored the military pilots, female military pilots and the WASP, by flying over the Indianapolis Speedway during that convention. So it was the first time we had a four-ship formation of all female T-38 pilots in 1983. Right now we have 800 members and still growing, and it's called the Women Military Aviators. So we include any female who is in the military involved with aviation, crew chiefs, flight engineers, and load masters, all of which belong to our organization.
Thank you, Olga. John, put you on the spot here now. Tell us about your mom. Your mom, how she was recruited.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We can hear you just fine.
Okay. Well, first, I want to thank you for allowing me to come in and speak about the WASP, and it's certainly a privilege. But I want to tell you a quick story about the WASP before I start talking about my mother. When the WASP were in Sweetwater for training, a male instructor walked in and looked around and said, "You know what? I don't want to teach a bunch of damn women to fly." And the one WASP said to the other trainee, "I'll get even with that guy if it's the last thing I ever do." Well, she did. She married him. True story. But as far as the training goes, my mother learned to fly with the civilian pilot training program in World War II. The government realized there was a shortage of pilots, and they started this training program, and it mandated 1 out of 10 people would be females, so it gave the ladies an opportunity to learn. So she had her pilot's license when the WASP program started, and she went to Sweetwater, got an invitation, and had to find her own way, like all the ladies. You get down to Sweetwater, you be here at this time, and you start your training. But as Lisa said, it was intensive, but long days. But they were excellent pilots. You know, my mother started my interest in flying. I've been a pilot for 50 years. I have another brother that's a pilot. I've got a niece and a nephew that are pilots, and my niece is, you know, really carrying this forward. And so it's encouraging to me to see what the WASP started. The other thing, we've taken these WASP, I became good friends with a WASP named Schutze Reynolds after my mother passed. She lived near me. And I took Schutze to several reunions, and going through the airports with Schutze, many of the lady pilots would come up and shake their hand and say, thank you, you know, you opened these doors for us. I actually saw a TSA agent in the Dallas airport, and she said, I really wanted to meet you, and there was tears coming down her face. And I thought, sometimes you don't realize the impact that these ladies had. It's just, this was my mother, and they were humble. Well, we just did what we had to, no big deal. But I know when I got my license, the first person I wanted to take up in the plane as a passenger was my mother. So she continued to fly. Our family had a Cessna 172, and some of the WASP continued flying after the WASP were disbanded. So it's been a great legacy, and I'm proud to be a part of the WASP Museum and see where this goes.